Chapter 12.
Iden felt like a leashed pet. She was allowed some liberty, but only under proper imperial supervision. If Gleb was not in residence at the same hours Iden was, three guards remained on duty. Gleb had warned Iden to always assume she was being overheard when they were present. Iden had assured her that it went without saying, even as she swallowed her anger at this blatant assumption of her stupidity. Meals were taken in Gleb's presence, and everywhere Iden went, she had an armed shadow walking a few paces behind her. What hurt most of all was not being able to fly solo. Iden missed the cockpit of her TIE fighter so much that she ached when she thought about it. She craved the comforting blackness and the circular enclosure, the glint of red lighting, the efficient controls that responded with ease to her touch. It had been 10 days since her arrival, over a month since her act of treason, and despite Admiral Versio's assurances that the Dreamers were actively searching for a figurehead, there had been no hint that the terrorists were aware of her presence here. No cryptic messages, no attacks on Gleb's house, nothing out of the ordinary. The only notice anyone had taken of her had been some of Gleb's students, who had shouted, "Traitor!" at her while she was being escorted to her ship 3 days before. Maybe the Dreamers simply thought that justice had been done. Maybe they didn't believe Iden. If only her mother hadn't doubted her, too. But Iden couldn't allow herself to dwell on that. She would complete her mission, sniff out the source of the leak, recover the dangerous information, and return to a hero's welcome and a parade. Or perhaps be quietly reassigned. Either way, her mother would, one day, hopefully soon, discover that her daughter was not, never had been, never could be, a traitor. She couldn't shake the memory of the holo recording, though. Zihei had looked so frail. Iden's mood and thoughts were dark when she stepped into the starfighter and settled into the pilot's seat. A moment later, she heard the footsteps of her co-pilot, Azen Novarin, on the ramp. Her first assigned co-pilot, or watchdog, as Iden knew she was meant to be, had been a woman named Sema Waskor. Captain Waskor had been judgmental, but at least she had also been taciturn, which meant that Iden was not going to be subjected to lectures. They had nodded to each other. Iden had gotten into the pilot's seat, and that was pretty much that, other than what was absolutely necessary for Iden to complete her patrol circuit over various Vardosian cities. It had suited her fine, and she was saddened to hear that Waskor had been badly injured in a tram accident, along with several others. At first, Iden had hoped the tram incident would herald contact from the Dreamers, but no such luck. Instead, she'd been saddled with Lieutenant Azen Novarin, an older man with graying hair and lines etched in his face from too much sun. He'd been entirely forgettable, and the last 2 days had been more boring than irritating. "Good morning, Iden," he greeted her as he boarded. She sighed. "Iden." "Good morning, Lieutenant Novarin." She heard the door slide close behind him as he replied, "I really hope it will be. We're going on a little trip together." And Iden felt the press of a blaster muzzle between her shoulder blades. Her pulse leapt, and she practically cheered. Finally. She went very still. "What's going on, Lieutenant?" she asked quietly. "I already told you. We're taking a little trip. Now, very naturally and calmly, I'd like you to get out of your seat, sit in the co-pilot's chair, and strap yourself into your crash webbing. And don't attempt to summon help. I won't hesitate to kill you." Through the viewport, she could see other pilots in the hangar going about their business. Bored-looking, all of them. Dull-eyed, doing their duty, going home in the evening to spouses and families, or a night alone watching holovids and drinking what alcohol their credits could purchase. They had all watched Iden like sure-hawks at first, hungry for novelty, but that had worn off by the fourth day. Now, no one noticed that Iden Versio was sitting in plain view with a blaster pressing into her back, and that was just fine with her. She obeyed, easing into the co-pilot's chair carefully, keeping her hands where he could see them, and strapped herself in.
"Hands behind you," Azen instructed.
When she complied, he snapped a pair of stun cuffs onto her wrists. "Now, be a good girl and don't make any noise, and I won't have to hurt you."
"Hurt me? I thought you were ready to kill me."
"Oh, don't think I won't if I have to. But you're much more valuable to us alive."
"Who's us?"
"All in good time. First, we need to get clear of this awful little planet and out of the Janata system."
Casually, Navarin flipped switches, pressed buttons, and went through the pre-check.
Then he said, "JSEC Patrol, this is Lieutenant Azen Navarin, piloting the Brightstar 4014B, requesting permission to take off."
"Brightstar is scheduled to be piloted by Aiden Versio, Navarin,"
came a voice.
"Copy that, but there has been a change of plan."
His voice was calm, bored. The voice of a pilot doing a job he didn't particularly like and had been doing for too long. Aiden found herself admiring that. "She is co-piloting today."
"I'll need a verbal confirmation of her flight code from Versio."
Azen looked at her expectantly. He indicated the blaster he held at his side, out of sight of the other security members milling about outside. Aiden hesitated, then said, her eyes locked with Navarin's,
"Versio here. Confirming my flight number is 18104.
"Copy that, you are cleared to go."
Navarin flipped the radio off. "You agreed rather quickly," he said.
"Well, you didn't leave me much choice. Your blaster wasn't set to stun," Aiden said, nodding at the weapon.
He didn't reply, focusing instead on lifting off and hovering for a moment before heading toward the open doors.
"Sharp eyes."
"No, it wasn't," he said, reaching down for it.
"But it is now." He fired.
By the time Aiden blinked into consciousness, slightly nauseous and aching, she and Azen were surrounded by stars.
"What happened?" she asked.
"Nothing much," her kidnapper replied. "Just a jump to hyperspace."
"There's a tracker on the ship."
"Not anymore." Aiden regarded him with a hint of admiration.
"You're good," she said.
"Let me guess, you were behind the tram incident. You needed to get my minder out of the way."
"Guilty as charged," Navarin replied.
"A lot of people died on that tram."
"A lot of people died on Alderaan." He gave her an appraising look. "Or have you forgotten that?"
Aiden winced and feigned pain and looked away. "No, of course not. Not forgetting about it is what got me court-martialed. I'm a little surprised it was this easy. I would have thought there would be some excitement around stealing a JSEC vessel.
Plenty more where we're going."
"And where is that, precisely? You never told me who we is. Am I being kidnapped, held for ransom? I should warn you. My father's pretty put out with me these days. Won't be all that lucrative." He actually chuckled at that. "No, that's definitely not the plan. You're a pretty cool customer, aren't you?" She shrugged. "TIE pilots who survived the destruction of the Death Star don't get rattled by much."
"Good point."
He was quiet for a moment, then said, "We're far enough away that I'm not too worried about pursuit. So here are some answers. We are a group of individuals who hate the Empire and all it stands for. And we're willing to do whatever it takes to bring it down." He glanced at her. "We thought you might want to help us do that."
"You're with the Rebel Alliance?"
He made a face as if he'd bitten into something extremely sour. "Hell no. Until they got the nerve up to steal those plans from Scarif, I'd have said the Alliance would rather meet the Emperor for tea and politely ask him to consider surrendering if it wouldn't bother him too terribly much." Despite the situation, Aiden smiled. That was precisely the impression she'd gotten of the Alliance.
"Then, who are you? Or don't you want me to know?"
Oh, he wanted her to know, all right. He was arrogant, and he wanted to brag. If all of them were like Azen, this mission was going to be over before it had barely begun. "We," he said, giving the words weight, "are Saw Gerrera's partisans." Aiden feigned surprise.
"What? Saw was killed, a Jedha.
I thought they, you, all died with him. That's what they told us." "The Empire thought so, but they were wrong. You can't kill an idea, Aiden. No matter how many of us die to bring down the Emperor and his corrupt, brutal regime, even if all of us die, that idea will live on after us. A terrible thought seized Aiden. So, are you going to kill me? To send a message to the Empire? How is it that none of them had considered that? Her father was so very certain this would work. No, you're safe with us, as long as you'll work with us. We went to a lot of trouble to get you off Ardos. We want to use you, not kill you. And hopefully, you'll convince everyone that you will, indeed, be of use.
I hope so myself, Aiden said. Where are we heading?
Dreamer home base, he replied. The Shadow Side. Aiden asked her abductor-rescuer questions as they traveled, trying to get more information useful to her mission and to the Empire. As she had expected, he didn't reveal much. The Shadow Side turned out to be exactly that, an area of a planet named Geosyn. Aizen explained briefly that this was a world with an extremely slow rotation, which made for long, hot days and long, cold nights. The dawn and dusk cycles, which the planet was currently experiencing, lasted about 3 months. We live in the narrow band of the planet's dusk, which is temperate, Aizen said. I've never heard of this planet, Aiden said. Galaxy's a big place, and the Empire isn't interested in anything it can't use. No occasional visitors? Let's just say we're not overly concerned in Imperial discovery, Aizen replied as he brought the ship down to the planet for landing. This area of Geosyn was almost frozen in time at the moment, right after sunset, when the light was almost but not entirely gone, and twilight had claimed the landscape. Everything was lavender and purple and blue. This world had no moon to cast potentially revealing illumination over its surface, and as the ship skimmed below the helpfully concealing canopy of dense trees, Aiden realized many of the rocks were limned in faint shades of green, white, blue, and purple. Lichen? She guessed. Yep, Aizen replied. Between the lingering light, the lichen, and night goggles, you won't even have to turn a ship's lights on. This is really perfect for you, isn't it? She said, adding. I suppose I should say us now, shouldn't I? Not yet, he replied. He threw her a glance. You've got an uphill battle, Aiden Versio. She disliked the familiarity. Hardly anyone addressed her as Aiden. Only her mother and Gideon had done so, and even Gideon called her by her rank and last name except on clearly informal occasions. Not bridling when strangers, enemies, used it was going to take some getting used to. And yet, she said, unable to suppress her irritation completely, you were the ones who abducted me. Don't look at me, Aizen replied. This whole thing was the Mentor's idea, so just be aware. The Mentor? Aiden asked alert. Did he refer to Steven? Does everyone have a code name? Some of us do. Some don't care. You'll find out which is which. They continued, flying nearly as close to the ground as a land speeder before finally docking in a large cavern. Aizen settled the ship down and, positioning his body so that Aiden couldn't see what he was doing, entered something on the console. You won't be able to operate this without the code, he said, so don't get any ideas. You think I want to go back to Vardos? She retorted. Can't be too sure, Aizen replied. He unfastened her stun cuffs. She rubbed her wrists when her hands were liberated, then accepted a pair of night goggles he handed her. Most of us don't need these anymore, and most of our light and heat sources don't disturb night vision. We know the area and our eyes have adjusted. He smiled. We usually need dark goggles for the first hour or so after we leave, actually. Another thing to mark me as an outsider, Aiden thought, but she accepted them and put them on. Better this than tripping over everything. She fell into step beside him as they left the cavern and set out across a flat area shielded by trees. Up ahead, the terrain again offered jagged, jutting rocks and tumbled boulders. Aizen began to climb and she followed, trying to place her feet and hands were heated as they scrambled up the rocky surface. He waited for her at the top, making no move to assist her. She clambered up and stood. First test? She inquired. Try about 27th, he said. You don't yet appreciate how well we've been monitoring you. That was unsettling, if it was true. Come on, Aizen continued. It's not far now. They walked along the ledge in single file, and Aiden was particularly grateful for the goggles. A fall from here would be nasty indeed. Eventually, the ledge widened onto a plateau where several overhangs and caves offered shelter. Inside the largest cave, she could see a light source and figures moving around. They had reached the Dreamer's encampment. As they drew closer, Aiden removed the goggles. This was obviously the central gathering spot. The scent of cooking wafted to her nostrils, making her mouth water and her stomach growl. Aiden had been kidnapped in the morning, and she assumed the appetizing aroma was emanating from the midday meal. Not that she could reckon the time of day by the unchanging light. She heard friendly conversation in Basic, but it was silent as Aiden and Aizen approached. By the time they reached the cavern, all the partisans were staring at her. "Everyone," Aizen said, "this is Aiden Versio."